horse trainers. It's a new profession, but it's a very popular profession. For example, in Wuhan, there's a business school, and they set up a program major. They set up a major in equestrian industry, including coaching, training, breeding, etc. And their graduates actually got their job offers 1 year before the graduation.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pegasus's Equine Entrepreneurs. Today we have a really special podcast for you because we are chatting with Zoe Quinn from Wonder Horse, a Chinese equestrian company based out of Shanghai, China. You can check out their business page at www.wonder-horse.com. Now, our guest today, Zoe, is co-founder with Jojo Wong, both of which are young entrepreneurial Chinese women who are on a mission to unite the Chinese equestrian world both domestically in China, as well as open up the Chinese market for Western equine businesses to potentially enter. So in this pod, you're going to learn a huge amount, but to highlight a few things to really capture your attention. First, we will learn about the history of horses in China. Then, we will break down the last 10 years of exponential growth of the equine industry in China and why that exponential growth has actually taken place. And then finally, we will discuss at great length the way the Chinese horse market currently operates, its pros and cons, as well as where the opportunities are both now and in the future for Western businesses that are looking to enter the Chinese horse market. Now, I will make the caveat that Zoe is Chinese and English is not her first language. So for our listeners who are not used to listening to a thick accent, it may be a little bit more difficult than usual to follow. But I do implore you to make the effort to listen, as not only is Zoe an amazing woman and an absolute treasure trove of valuable information, but I think her English is excellent and 1,000 times better than my Chinese or any other language, to be fair. So stick it out, because I promise you the juice is worth the squeeze. One quick bit of admin before we get started. If you are listening to this and you are an equine entrepreneur and you want to share your story with our audience, then please do reach out to us and join us on this podcast. To do so, head over to www.thepegasus.app/podcast to register. And if you're going to be in Kentucky start of October for Equitana, please come find us and say hello, as we would love to meet you all and hear your feedback on both the podcast and the platform. And we will be handing out free fudge. So if you don't want to talk to us, you don't think we're special, and you have no feedback, at least come over and just get yourself some free fudge. Our tent will be right next to the Equitana merchandise tent, and it will be bright pink. So you absolutely should not be able to miss it. All right, guys, with all that said, let's jump into today's podcast with Zoe Quinn from Wonder Horse.
Whereabouts in China are you?
I'm in Shanghai. Okay. I'm based in Shanghai.
Lovely. Yes. I went to Shanghai when I was 12 years of age, and it would have been about 1998.
Okay. Disclosure
of age. Yeah. And it's changed a lot since then, I'm certain.
Yeah. Certainly. But I live in France for 8 years. Yeah, and studying there, and I just moved back to China and relocated in Shanghai since 2015. So it's, for me, it's also new, and I think I didn't really witness the huge change of Shanghai from the old time to the now Shanghai, but still a lot of going on happened in the last six years.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So for our listeners who may not know you, because not many American equestrians are very savvy when it comes to the Chinese equestrian world, can you please tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and how you yourself got into riding?
Well, my name is Zoe King. I'm currently based in Shanghai, in China. My story. Wow. How long do you have? The story that I became got involved in the equine industry, I will say is a lucky surprise. Because, right. You know, I was born and raised in China in the 80s. So Chinese family, normally at that time, didn't have the money and energies to have pets. So I didn't grow up, have the chance to grow up with any cats or dogs. So I definitely cannot imagine that one day I will get so close to horses. Yeah, it's a very surprising opportunity occurs in my life. So what happened is all happens in France. So I got a master's degree and I graduated in a law school in France. After that, I started my first job and my career in a law firm, you know, in Paris, like every other my classmates. But one of the first clients I handled in the law firm was PMU. I don't know if you guys heard about this.
What's PMU?
In fact, PMU is the monopolized horse racing betting operator in France.
And mobilized?
Yeah. It's
right.
The nation is like a national or state-owned horse racing betting operator. There's the only one in France.
Right.
So PMU, at that time, it was the second biggest in the world in terms of turnover, right after Japan. Now it's catch up by Hong Kong Jockey Club. But yeah, PMU and the whole French racing and equestrian industry at that time got very interested in a Chinese equine market. They want to knock at the door and see what happened, what was happening in China.
What year was this?
Yeah, so I got the chance to assist PMU and go to China and got involved in this industry in these projects with China since the beginning. Like it was like in 2010. So
right.
11 years ago.
So 11 years ago, the French racing industry was already thinking about how do we take advantage of the growing interest in racehorses in China? And they basically sent you over there to work for them and scout the market and provide that information back to them.
Yes, I think they're quite visionary. And of course, there's already some signals that the market is opening up, it's merging. So I was fortunate enough to assist them and go between France, China. And later on in 2015, 6 years ago, they offered me the mission and to move back to relocate in Shanghai to set up their official representative office
for
the French horse industry to promote the French horse industry, et cetera. So I took the opportunity, I took the mission and moved back to China at that time.
When you went to France, were you anticipating on getting into the horse market there? Or was that just something that was always a vision of yours?
Oh, good question. I didn't have the chance to ride on horses until I have the opportunity to work for this top, this project. So for this client. So I think, well, I was doing that. I was working on that. I have to figure out what is horse riding, right? So I personally took some classes. Luckily in France, you can find, equestrian clubs everywhere. A little bit difficult in Paris, but you can always manage to find some classes, not very expensive compared to China. And I took some classes in Paris and then did some intensive, we will say, programs in the rest of France. So I will not say I'm a good rider. I cannot be a professional rider, but I really enjoy the feeling of riding horses in the nature, especially.
What kind of discipline do you ride?
It's just like outdoor riding is my favorite.
Oh, nice. So, in France, sounds wonderful.
Yeah, in France, you have the forest, you have the rivers, and our instructors always encourage us and bring us to the natural. And that's the thing that I fell in love with horses.
Yeah. Well, really quickly, because I know you want to jump into some of the more economics of it, but when you were in France and you said you had a lot of equestrian clubs around you, what do you mean by that? Are those boarding barns, training centers? Because I guess we don't really use the term equestrian club here unless we're referring to, say, like a pony club or like a polo or fox hunting club. So are there just clubs anywhere in France that you can just join and ride, or how does that work?
Oh, yes, there are many, because I think the French system, the French industry is quite developed and very complete, I will say, integrated. When I say equestrian club, it's the club that you can just get in, you know, ringing, and then they have horses and you can take their horses to take classes. They basically run the horses for you to take the class, to follow the classes. And of course, there are other, like, more private farms that you have to be the horse owners and to ride on your own horses. And there are also, like, stables, mm-hmm. like stables to breed, the breeding stables for one broad and thoroughbreds. And there are many also in Paris, for example. You have 2-3 race courses around the city. So many, many things happening in France about horses. And that's why also I have the opportunity to immerse myself in the beginning, right? In a nation, in a place full of this different kind of horse activities.
Right. That's sure. Awesome.
Sure. I want to love to learn more about you coming to China and how that started. But before we do, just to give people a bit more context about who you are and what you do. So outside of starting this Shanghai office for the French Racing Industry Bureau, whatever it's called, you also have your own Chinese equestrian business podcast and your own web-based platform. Is that separate too, or is that part of your job with the French organization?
Oh, it came after. So in 2015, I came here to set up the office. And later, 3 years after, I thought, yeah, it was fun. It was nice to be a representative for such an important institution and industry. But I always think that I should be an entrepreneur. I think maybe I was infected by the environment in Shanghai as well, because I meet many entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs every day in Shanghai, especially female entrepreneurs.
Really?
So maybe they kind of inspire me to really set up my own business and my own company. So I set up Wonder Horse, my own company, in late 2018. And Wonder Horse is, we consider Wonder Horse as a business solution providers focusing on Chinese equine market and a bespoke community for equestrian community in China. So basically, we can provide full services and tailor-made solutions to all business stakeholders, can be such as federations, clubs, brands, entrepreneurs, and investors, both in China and international. In addition, we have also our products and services relating to equestrian experience or travels and training programs to individuals in the community. The podcast you mentioned is one of our products, and I would say our services, standard services as well. But of course, we are the podcast. We get in touch and we talk to many amazing professionals in the community.
Sure. And just for the audience, repeat again the name of it.
Wonder Horse, like Wonder Woman with horse.
I love that. Are there a lot of other businesses like this in China, or would you say that you're kind of the pioneer in this space?
Oh, I would say it's quite unique, because I see the many entrepreneurs, when they step into the equine business, the first idea will be to run an equestrian club. you know. So I wasn't quite in that because at that time in 2018, first of all, I think there will be more and more equestrian clubs in China, and I don't want to be one of 2,000 or 3,000. I also think that my strength and the strength of our team is to connect people, bring people together, and we also have the international resources. So I think we can do better to provide services to 2,000 and 3,000 equestrian clubs and connect them with what they need than to be a competitor or just run my equestrian clubs.
Sure. So to sum that up, Wonder Horse is essentially our company's Pegasus, but you're essentially the Pegasus of China, right? In the sense of rather than trying to create an equestrian event or run an equestrian business, instead you're building a technology platform that allows anyone who wants to participate in the sport to find an event, to register for an event, to book lessons, to find a boarding barn, all that sort of stuff. And so you're basically creating the modern technology to help the sport and economy function more effectively.
Yeah, I would say we are going there. It will be our ultimate goal, but we are not quite there yet. I would love to be more digitalized and technical in our services. But for the moment being, we still in the stage of providing tailor-made services, consulting services to different clients with different stage of their development, different business, different stage of the development and different demands. And I think once we can really standardize our services and we have enough traffic, the digital platform is definitely our next step.
Yeah. Right. Do you have a consulting project that you're able to talk about? So for the listeners to get an understanding of some of the types of projects that you might be working on?
Oh, yes, of course. We can talk about for example, we assist a leading Chinese equestrian club in the south of China, in Dongguan City, named Camelot Equestrian Club. The club has like more than 20 years of existence histories. The most important thing, element, I will say, to make them so special is it's funded by one of the first Olympic riders in China named Mr. Li Zhenqiang. He's also the winner of FEI award All Against the Odds in 2018. So he was the first Olympic riders to compete in Beijing Olympics. And this year in the Tokyo just finished, he participate again, and this time with his son, Mr. Li Yaofeng. So the father and son participate together in the jumping team for China and competing in Tokyo. So we are very, aside from the business part, we are so touched and impressed by the father-son tradition and Mr. Li Zhenqiang and the Camelot's history. So we assist them in various projects or aspects like improving the VIP services and membership services to their members, for example. And secondly, connecting, bringing more international resources. For example, when they train overseas in Belgium, in France, in Germany, we are able to arrange things for them, logistic for them. And on the other hand, the club may need foreign coaches and professionals to come to China to provide technical support or experience to the riders and coach and their members, etc. So,
right.
Yeah.
So what percentage of your clients in the consulting space, domestic Chinese clients, and what percentage are international clients?
Oh, I would say
get
half,
access
half.
To the Chinese market.
Yeah, I would say half half. I think, yeah, both sides is sometimes is very complementary. So half-half, although they don't necessarily have the same demands or needs, of course. Yeah, I would say half-half. And our Chinese clients are more like mostly equestrian clubs and important and leading equestrian clubs in China. And the portfolio of international or foreign clients can be more various.
Right, right. Okay. Well, now that we kind of have an understanding about who you are and what you do, I wanted to get back a little bit. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you was the history of horses in China. So you had said that you grew up in the 80s, and in the 80s, for our listeners who aren't very savvy with Chinese history, but China essentially went through a rapid modernization from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s at a scale the world has never seen before. So in your, you know, you're still a young person, but in your young life, you've seen the world go from not being able to own cats and dogs because that wasn't what people did, or they didn't have the income or whatever, to now lots of Chinese families being as wealthy as, you know, America's most wealthy, and being able to afford horses as a hobby, as a pets, etc. So what has been the history of horses in China and Chinese culture? And then how has that changed, and why has that changed in your lifetime?
Yes, good question. I would say, well, first of all, you have to understand China is so big, but USA is so big, but we have much more population. So when you say that most of Chinese can afford a horse, not so true, because I think it's still a small group of people can afford owning a horse and also send their kids to the equestrian club to ride. But back to the history, many may say that China has a long history of horse culture. I would say yes and no, because as you know, China, big country like China, we have 56 ethnicities in China. So the Chinese people, the Han ethnicities is the majority. But they are more like farming people, not really the riding people.
Right.
It's only those ethnicities in the north of China, especially in Xinjiang area, really Tibet, they are indeed traditionally a riding population. So I would say part of China has very long and history of horse riding as a sport or as a way of living, but also in a very huge part of China, we don't even now. But I think when the part of China, they really have the tradition is really got into their blood. For example, when I went to Inner Mongolia or Xinjiang for horse racing, local horse racing without betting, because betting is forbidden in China for now, for the moment being. So only the horse racing with local horses in Inner Mongolia and Xinjiang attract naturally the audience. You don't have to make the publicity or make the advertisement. They just come. They just show up.
And you said this is this in the north of China, or is this actually across the border in Mongolia?
Yeah, Inner Mongolia is the border with Mongolia, and also the Xinjiang province is next to Inner Mongolia.
Is the reason that they have a history of horses in that part of China, because Mongolia is a nomadic culture, they've always kind of used horses as part of their agricultural or nomadic lifestyle. So that has kind of bled across the border into northern China. So that culture of riding horses has existed there where it hasn't in other parts of the country.
Yeah, but you know, Mongolia, if we say in the history, is part of China, because you have the Akatekan,
right.
Akahan, he's like almost cover all Asia, especially close to close to Russia, and go very far to the Europe. So, right. Yeah, and then later history make that Mongolia divided into Inner Mongolia and Mongolia country. So I think it's the group of people in the north, because the weather is very cold. They have to travel around by seasons with horses. There are huge grassland in this area. So the natural, I think, make them a riding population, riding people. So it still continue until now. So if we made a comparison of horse racing in Inner Mongolia or Xinjiang with the horse racing in metropolitans like Wuhan, they have horse racing. But the organizer in Wuhan has to put a lot of effort and money to attract audience to see the horse, to see the horse racing and to be in the race course. So it's quite different in cultures in China.
In Wuhan, when they put on the horse racing, how does that work if you're not allowed to bet in China?
Hey, are you an equestrian event organizer looking to put on your next clinic or schooling show? Pegasus is about to release its new event management system, which is a modern platform that makes it easy to accept entry registrations, receive digital signatures for your event paperwork, as well as manage the logistics and scheduling of your event. You can even digitally showcase your vendors and sponsors so that brands have much better visibility than the traditional logo on a fence. Pegasus has made it easy to run an event from start to finish with features designed for everyone involved, especially the riders, who can now easily register and receive real-time updates. Gone are the days of running your event through Facebook or tech from the 90s. Check out the launch of the Pegasus event management system at www.thepegasus.app. That is www.thepegasus.app.
They sometimes call it demonstration racing. So they're racing of course, there's prize money for winners, for horse owners, for trainers and jockeys. But yeah, so it's not very attractive in a financial way to the audience. But the people in Inner Mongolia, they're willing to go to see the horse racing even without this treat, right?
Right.
And how they run also for the audience, they have the lucky draw, you know, you guess the numbers, but you cannot bet for money.
Right. Can you gamble in Mongolia? Like, is there a culture of people crossing into Mongolia to bet on races and then coming home?
Legally, you cannot. So that's why I'm saying that it's not the betting. It's not really the money. Of course, if you have the betting, the horse racing will be much more interesting and exciting. But even without the betting, and in the Mongolia and Xinjiang, people still go to see the horse racing.
Right. Okay, so that's historically why there has been more of a horse culture in the north. So how have things changed since you've grown up, since the 80s?
Yes, I think what is different is when it comes to equestrian sports. You know, equestrian sport is, we cannot say equestrian sport is a traditional sport in China, especially the modern equestrian sports. I think it is imported overseas, especially I think very influenced by Europe. So it's a new thing in China. And its development path is different than horse racing or like a traditional horse events activities. The equestrian population, we have seen more equestrian population growing in big cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Chengdu, you name it. I think it all happens in the recent 5 years, right before. I came back to China right on the time, I think, to see the taking off of equestrian sport in China. We also,
That was 2011, right?
2015.
Right. So equestrian sports, like, so your English riding sort of equestrian sports have only really come to any sense of maturity in the last 6 years in China.
I will say, huge rapid growth and huge increase of riding population and equestrian clubs in the past 5-6 years. But of course, it has been introduced to China way before that. I think 10, even, you know, the Camelot Equestrian Club I mentioned earlier, they exist for more than 20 years. So 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, Chinese people know of the equestrian sports, but the taking off is in the last 5-6 years, I will say.
What happened 5-6 years ago that has led to a rapid, to an acceleration of equestrian sports in China?
I think partly because we have more upper and middle class family.
Right.
From that time. And you know, in China, education for kids come always first in the family. Mm. So a lot of Chinese people, a lot of Chinese parents, they just consider equestrian sport an elite sport. So they will, put their kids in equestrian clubs. They will let their kids to learn how to ride. They consider equestrian sport as more international activities, elite activities, and prestigious activities. So I think is that when the equestrian sport really take off at that time, and of course that makes more and more equestrian clubs opening up in every city in China, bigger city of course, but small. My hometown is a very small town. We still have a very small, tiny pony club with I think five, a little bit skinny horses. So two for me, and so it's going everywhere. You know, also Chinese people in the recent 5-6 years, it's also there was a wave of digital marketing, e-commerce. So those equestrian clubs and owners, they will spare no effort to promote the sport and their clubs to attract more clients. Maybe the kids of my neighbor used to learn the ice hockey or fencing when they transfer maybe into equestrian sports. And equestrian sport is considered in a very recent article in Bond Chinese press, is considered by the upper and middle class parents the most desirable off-campus activities, followed by golf, ice hockey, and fencing. So really? I would say equestrian sport is the new golf in China.
Wow.
Yes, ice hockey.
Is the reason you mentioned that they were doing it because kids' education comes first and they see this as a prestigious international sport. Are they doing it because it's a prestigious international sport, or is it a way, I mean, China, that as from a Western perspective, China is renowned for, because you are such a large population, you're renowned for the people who can afford to participate in things that distinguish and display their wealth and their status being something they want, because it's a way that you separate yourself from a population of 1.7 billion people. So are parents encouraging their kids to do equestrianism because it's good for their education and their future, or are they doing it because it's a display of wealth and status?
I think the education comes first for the parents' mind. Of course, it's the appealing, the most appealing point to attract parents and or kids or riders to start the sport. But later on, I believe every riders or most of the riders, they realize that horse riding is really good. It's a good sport for everything, for their health, mental health, physical health, and mental health. For the kids, they become very independent and integrate and a very caring person. I think this advantage of equestrian sports itself comes after, but it is what it makes the equestrian sports growth so sustainable and continue.
Yeah, it keeps the kids out of trouble.
I never have that cat and stocks going up. And nowadays, for those young riders, sometimes their birthday gift can be a horse, a pony. So I'm so envy.
That's amazing. Out of curiosity, what do the clubs cost there? So if you're a parent and you're looking to send your kid to an equestrian club, what would that price tag look like?
Yeah, if you are not a horse owner yet, so basically it's on class lesson, you know, lesson basis. And it's still to improve, but Chinese intend to prefer individual one-month lessons. So it's more expensive. But the price is variable from city to city, of course. But I would say the most expensive is in Beijing and Shanghai. Can be like around, can up to like 1,500 RMB. I don't know how it makes, like 200 US dollar.
200.
Something like that.
A week or
per ride?
No, per lesson.
For
45 minutes.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wow. So for a lesson on someone else's horse, is that right? It's not even your own horse?
On the club's horses.
So and that's about 200 US dollar for half an hour.
Yeah. Up to the top price. But averagely, I would say it's like 800 RMB in big cities. So 800 RMB makes like 120 US dollar.
Right.
Per lesson.
Yeah.
On someone else's horse.
Yes, on club horses. Okay. But if you own your horse, I think, you still have to pay for the coaching, tutoring fees. So maybe a little bit less, but you still have the 100 something US dollar per lessons include a good part of tutoring fees, and the rest is the horse. So right. If you own a horse, you have to pay for the coach as well.
Right.
And the families that are paying this price, this isn't just the elite. This is like middle class families as well.
Yeah, I was a middle and upper class families in big cities, of course. Yeah, right.
So that's actually pretty equivalent to America.
Well, how often are they riding? So, I ask because at least here, right, if you have your own horse, you're going to be paying for boarding, assuming you don't have your own farm. And of course, all the expenses that go into having a horse and then your training. So maybe you train once a week. But if you don't have your own horse, it's at least less common to go to a place. Well, I mean, I guess it depends on who you are and where you are, but it's at least a little bit less common to ride. You're not necessarily paying for riding every single day on another horse that's not yours.
But it's not the problem of horse vacancy. It's more like the distance of the equestrian clubs and the availabilities of their parents. You know, the parents, Chinese parents, just talk their kids, accompany their kids everywhere. So it has to be the like a weekend or available time for parents as well, because it may take you like 1.5 hours driving from your home to the equestrian clubs.
Wow. Yeah.
How many in your large clubs in the cities, how many
people are
horses
there?
/ trainers? Like, what are the size of these clubs?
For example, let's take a Camelot, for example. It's next to Shenzhen, the club. So it's a big city, Shenzhen. And they have more than like, they have stables for more than 200 horses. And they have over 30 coaches, Chinese coaches, and several, like one or two, and also go between, you know, coming off and foreign coaches. So yeah, they have combined over 1,000 members.
Right. Oh, wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So what would like board cost? So if I bought my own horse in China and I wanted to keep him at the club, what would that cost me?
On average, for example, in Shanghai, the club will charge you like 100,000 RMB. Yeah, no, a year. 100,000 only to the horse boarding, you know, so and a little bit daily training.
So that's what's that, 20,000 a year? 20,000 USD? It's
20,000, yeah.
Yeah, 20,000 USD a year.
That's not bad.
That's pretty equivalent.
It's not so expensive, yeah. But then it comes with the so everything else is additional. So the vets, right. Of course, the maybe a basic feed, and also if you take the lessons you ride on your horses with a coach, you have to pay the coach fee. But yeah. I think it's every
and
it's the same
for. And for
that's on the higher end tier, but it's not absurd.
It's not absurd.
Yeah.
And in these large clubs, say for example, they have 1,000 members. Let's assume of those 1,000 members, 800 of them board their horses.
Not so high percentage.
Okay, so let's say 500, 50%.
That's a big bar.
Even not that. So the I think the fact is we don't have so many, but it's coming up. Huh? It's going also, but the percentage is relatively small, still small.
Oh right. So in China, the way it usually works is that most of the horses that people ride are owned by the club, as opposed to the individuals owning the horses.
Yes. So you see,
and that makes sense, because I suppose there isn't enough. People don't have farms to keep their horses on. So if you don't keep it at the club, then you can't exactly take your horse back to your city apartment.
But how many horses will be at the club?
Like in Cameroon, it's over 200.
Yeah.
It depends. The size can be, in my hometown can be 5. So depends on the size. I think it's very the land is very a big issue for equestrian clubs in China. So it's not always easy to get the land, get all the permits and the license to use the land properly. So if you have a very small, and I don't know if you guys heard about that, we have even pony clubs on rooftop of shopping malls.
No, you do what? Not.
I would not say that I approve the idea. I'm not definitely not agree with the idea, but it happens, it exists. And they normally they will have 3-5 small, very, very little ponies for the kids. As an entrance, you know, entrance level experience and some riding lessons as a window of the equestrian clubs. And later on, if they got really interested, they will change clubs, or maybe the same club will possess bigger stable or clubs outside cities or a little bit far away.
That makes sense. Do the ponies actually live there, or are they just brought there to get exposure, get the kids excited to ride?
You mean if they spend the night over there?
Yeah, do they live at the shopping mall?
Do they live on top of the shopping mall?
They live in their box on top of the shopping mall. But I think they should have some, you know, free time. They bring them, they change them, they make the rotation, hopefully. They make the rotation. And then, they can get some freedom and, spare time, more spaces when they're not on the rooftop.
Right. So I can't believe
that's a sentence.
I'm going to have to Google this and see this. So there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to like the Western world and horse. Basically, when people in the Western world and in America and Europe send horses to China, there's just so much that we don't know about, like where do they live? How many acres are they on? What is the environment like? It's like no one really has a firsthand account to have seen it, to come back and said, you know, to say like, oh, they live in these rolling acres or the stalls look like this or blah, blah, blah. So can you paint a picture of what a typical equestrian club looks like. And I mean that, like, with all these horses, there could be 200 horses there. Do they have like in, are they on lots of acreage? Do they have lots of grass? Do you need to bring hay, like lots of hay in to supplement their food? Like, what is a non-shopping mall environment, experience like for a horse that lives in China?
Yeah, of course. The horse, the rooftop is a little bit extreme, simple, but in a normal, I would say standard and a good stable. We have a lot of good stable equestrian clubs in China as well. But for example, Camelot, you have outdoor arenas, you have indoor arena, you have very clean and neat boxes. And the fit and the supplements, everything, the equipments, mostly bought from overseas. So I will say in a normal stable, it's quite the same as you may see in Europe. I've never been to the US, but I imagine it should be the same. But the only difference, I think, is the size of the land. The size of the land that possessed by the equestrian clubs, Chinese equestrian club, due to the issue, the land issue, they tend to be smaller. And as an outdoor rider as myself, I don't find many equestrian club providing the outdoor riding because they don't have the outdoor riding environment or space. And they don't have the license, permit to bring their riders and horses outdoor. So it's maybe the only difference.
When you say equestrian cup, what do you mean by that?
Oh, equestrian club. Sorry.
Oh, club. Sorry. Yeah. Club. Right. So for your average club, let's say, it sounds like Camelot is one of the high-end clubs. For your average club in China, are the horses, do they live in the stables or do they also have like an outdoor grazing area attached to the club?
Normally, they live in boxes because they don't have enough land. But right. Some equestrian clubs, they have, yes, a little small grassland for them to walk around, etc. So, yeah, normally they still live in boxes.
Right. Are the horses super, I don't want to say crazy, but are they really just anxious because they're not able to be outdoors as much? Because I know for context here, when you have the horses in, inside in a stall for a really long time, they get really anxious. And so having turnout is really important to their like mental health. So are the horses there really stressed out because they're in boxes all the time and they're not really able to be a horse?
Oh, I think maybe horses is also quite adapted. So, of course, I see from what I see, the horses taking in the good club, they're taking really good care. They have the massage. They have the red line. How do you say that? The heating.
Heating lamps,
the showers, they have everything. Of course, it would be nice to have more land for them to walk out. But, it's also something that improving as well. In Beijing, for example, there's a new path of 10 kilometers long and study from an equestrian club and travel the several public park and passing by museums, something like that, and make a circle for the horses, the riders can go out for a nice walk. So I think as the sports developing, the needs developing, and the government or local government or equestrian clubs, they will figure it out and extend or make exception or make some improvement, more spaces for horses and riders.
Sure. Okay, that's interesting. So it basically sounds like at its most basic level, space is a premium in China. And because the equestrian industry in China is new but growing rapidly, the clubs have had to make do and do the best they can with the space they've got. But as the sport becomes more and more popular, local governments are working with the equestrian economy to find creative ways to create the space that the clubs need to be able to properly exercise the horses.
Yes, yes, because the horse walking path I mentioned before is in Beijing, you know. Imagine sometimes some path even people cannot, maybe don't have access to. So they open some access and path for horses. I think it's a huge progress as well. I can say a nice gesture.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back to when you first came to China, so just finishing this like history of growth of the sport in China. So when you came back in 2015, well, actually, let's go back to 2011. 2011 was when you were working with the French organization and your job was to basically, I suppose, guide them on market entry into China. So what was 2011 to 2015 like? And then why did it change in 2015?
I would say 2010 is primary development for Chinese equestrian sports. And also it was the time that it's more like a B2B business. So federations to federations, equestrian clubs to equestrian clubs, maybe horse dealers to equestrian clubs, is still very close circles. And not very popular as a topic or as activities. And what it changed is in 2015, I think more Chinese people, you know, riders coming, and that it make the business like it can be B2C as well. Nowadays, we have individual horse owners, we have individual riders, we have parents, families got into this industry. And the size of the market, I will say basically triple
for the five years role.
And then the growth is very rapid from 2015. So in 2019, we had over 2,000 equestrian clubs, according to the statistic. And this number is 90% of an increase compared to 2018.
Right. So the amount of equestrian clubs in China grew by 90% in 1 year.
19. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, is there a national governing equestrian industry body in China, or that's been like really pushing and propelling this growth, or is this growth essentially due to, as you mentioned earlier, that e-commerce websites becoming so accessible that a lot of these equestrian clubs have been able to easily advertise cheaply like they could not in the past? And that's kind of what's been the driving force of increased club growth.
Yeah, there are not one, but two government bodies in China relating to horses. One is China Horse Industry Association. They are taking care of, they are in charge of more like the agriculture part of the horse industry, like stock book registration, vets, etc. And the other is Chinese Equestrian Association. They are more in charge of competition organization, rules, competition rules, and riders registration, etc. So the two bodies, and of course they play an important role in promoting and in helping the industry to grow as the official and government institutions, and especially when we see the Chinese jumping and eventing teams at Tokyo, the Chinese Equestrian Association did a great job and support them until to the international stage. So I would say very important, but also the driven force of the growth is still, I think, coming up from the bottom of the market as the consumption power of Chinese riders, middle and upper class families, and some very billionaires and very wealthy horse lovers, of course, as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Can we go back to my question about importing?
Yes, we can.
So are most of the Chinese riders buying and maybe even selling horses from a particular region? Like, so for example, in America, people love to buy and import horses from Europe. So that's one of the big, you know, they like love German horses and Irish horses, and that's just the coveted thing here. Is that similar? Is that a similar case in China as well? Like, do the Chinese riders and horse owners like to import their horses from Europe, or is there another region where they like to buy them from?
Well, I think it depends also on the race, on the breed of the horses. So for the racing horses can be more diversified in terms of imported countries. But for the equestrian, for the warm broth, mostly they import from Europe. Statistically, the first country, if I remember well, is Holland, is Netherlands. Surprisingly, but I think most part of it is also because the transportation and quarantine arrangement that is more easy to do it in Netherlands than the other countries. So sometimes they bought the horses from Germany or France. They just assembled them in Netherlands for the quarantines and then transportation. And sometimes it was counted, those horses were counted as Netherlands exported horses.
Interesting. So even though they came from Germany, technically, in that instance?
Yes. Yes.
So why are they quarantined there? Wouldn't they quarantine once they get to China?
It's a very complicated program because China has different agreement with in terms of horses importation and quarantines with European countries and UK now. So very different. Sometimes can be suspended for one country because of the horse disease. For example, it was the case for France, suspended for like many years. And then the horses has to do the quarantines in France, or they bring it to other countries to do the quarantines. So it's still not very easy in the process of horse importation and horse changing and transport from Europe. So that's probably the one of the most important point why we don't have so many. We should have so many horse owners in China, because consider the size of the market and the numbers of equestrian clubs and riders. But still very relatively expensive to buy and import warm broth from Europe. For the racing horse, for the thoroughbred, they can be more easy and less expensive because usually it's the huge racing club in China or several individual horse owners put together, and they just hire a chapter. They just arrange the chapters flying from, like, let's say New Zealand or Ireland or UK or Australia. And for all chapters, they can contain many more horses. So it can break down the cost of the importation.
Right. What about from America? Are Chinese riders buying American horses?
Yes, a good question. What I know of, I think the American horses, there's a lot. First of all, I think there are many Western cowboy riders in China as well. In a certain area, in Shandong province, for example, there are many, I think.
Where is that? Is that the northeast?
Northeast, yes.
Northeast. So there's quite a lot of Western discipline riders in the northeast in China.
Yes, bringing Western cowboy riding.
Do you know why it's taken off in that part of the country?
Oh, it's wild and exciting. I think people there, they drink and they ride horses. like riding horses. They are just admire the cowboy lifestyle, I think. And those people make buy Western horses and equipment from the U.S. And also, I think, of course, the USA is a very important country of horse racing. So the thoroughbred, I know you guys export quite a number of thoroughbreds to the South Korea, for example, because they race on dirt, race track. So can be the same condition or the same situation in China. But maybe the transportation protocol and the agreements between the governments has to be figured out and to be more easy to make the deal more smoothly. And I think.
Right. So a lot of the places where Chinese importers of horses are choosing to import horses from, a lot of that decision is based on where they can actually get horses legally and logistically, as opposed to where they want to get horses from.
Yes, of course. Obviously, it's like if we travel, we have to go to the countries that literally give us a visa, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. But you have to understand that for Americans, that's quite abstract because they're used to being able to go to any country in the world.
We can get whatever horse we want, wherever we want.
Yeah. Yes. That's why there's not the same mentality or thinking the things in different ways, because the first concern, of course, is whether I can get it and how easy I can get it. And of course, the bloodline comes after and is very important as well. But, you know, as we mentioned, there's still a huge gap of information between China and international communities when it comes to equine industry. And that's one of our mission. That's why we come up with, we want to bridge the gap.
Yeah, that's what your podcast is about.
We want to make the information more transparent and more accessible for Chinese part and for international part as stakeholders to look at Chinese market as well. So the both way.
Are there any signs yet that China is looking to breed its own horses, and are there breeding programs?
Yes, good question. In fact, as I said, I mentioned earlier, in the north of China, they have the tradition of horse culture and also breeding. So Xinjiang in Mongolia is also the important breeding area for horses, Chinese horses. And in China, we have many horses. We have 3.7 million horses in China. It's the 6% of the world, and it's ranking 5 in the world. But local breed is mostly like Xinjiang horses or Xinjiang Yili horses and Mongolian horses. They are not made for equestrian sports. They are reputed. They're well known for their endurance. So they can be used to be a transportation animal. And later on, I think they are they're also used for travel. You know, horseback travel is a huge thing in China in these areas as well. But it's not so apt for modern equestrian sports, not for horse racing. So we have to find a way to improve or to breed our thoroughbreds, our warm breeds, can be cross-bred breeding, can be that we improve our own broad lines. And these projects are ongoing. And in a recent 5 years development plan issued by Chinese governments, the breeding is definitely the main concern for the government bodies in this when they look at the Chinese equestrian industry, because they don't only want this industry benefit a small part of people, small group of people. They are wealthy upper class, send their kids to enjoy these sports, but they want to expand the benefits to farmers to breeders in this relatively underdeveloped area to bring them to share, you know, the outcome of the market development with them as well. But I would say, yeah, as any expert in the equestrian industry will say, it's a long way. So breeding is a long way to go, but has to start somewhere.
Right. So so to sum that up, there's a rich history of Chinese horses and breeding Chinese horses, but they don't fit modern English equestrian sports. So are there any or even if very, very new, are there any Chinese businesses that are breeding for equestrian sports, maybe even by importing horses from overseas and then starting their own equestrian breeding program in China?
Yes, they do. They do. In these areas, they import stadiums, for example, to crossbreed with local horses to improve the warm blood horses locally. A lot of foreign stakeholders got involved as well. For example, France, they have the lab specialized in crossbreeding, and also, hey, how to say, you put the take this off the eggs with the, you know,
the artificial insemination.
Yes, the artificial insemination. They're specialized in that. They built up a huge lab in Xinjiang, and to help the farmers and breeders there to really scientifically study and to work on improvement of the local bread. And there are also competitions, reserves dedicated to local horses or local bred horses in China, both for equestrian jumping and for horse racing.
Right, right. Interesting. If I can sum this up leading into my next question. So because of the land restrictions, a lot of the equestrian clubs in China, there isn't the demand at a consumer level yet for everyone to own their own horse because they've got nowhere to keep it. So the amount of horses that China is importing is less because instead of the individuals owning their own horse, the clubs own the horse. So they might have 5,000 members, but they might only need 200 horses, and those 5,000 members ride those 200 horses. So that would mean that as far as the equestrian economy or the business is concerned, especially if, say, you're an American equestrian business professional or a European business professional, then the opportunity isn't so much there to make money out of the Chinese market or by working with the Chinese equestrian industry by selling them horses. It sounds like there's more opportunity for international equestrian businesses in China to be involved with the training, providing training services, coming in as a coach to teach lessons, etc. Is that accurate? Is there a demand by these equestrian clubs to have foreign equestrian professionals come and work and deliver lessons and looking and horse care at the actual clubs?
I would say all equestrian clubs eventually they would like to have more individual horse owners, because horse owners, most of the time, they bought horses via or through the equestrian club. There's trading commissions and also this added values, super values on the horses as well. So eventually, we will see some of equestrian clubs in China, they will decrease the number of members who don't own a horse. But increased number of individual horse owners. So there will be a change. So still room, still opportunities for foreign dealers, brokers, and breeders to sell their horses, of course, and many other opportunities coming up with the training, coaching, know-how sharing, technical knowledge sharing. I think the equine industrial chain is so big, it's so long, it's so complete. There's always room to do business in China. And if we look into the coaching or the and professional training or professional know-how sharing aspect, particularly in China, we have around 21,000 coaches, of which 19% foreign coaches in China.
Right.
With the pandemic, of course, the number decreased a little bit, but it's a huge demand for foreign coaches, instructors, not only them, but also the other professionals like farriers, vets, dentists, etc.
Is there a demand because you haven't got enough people domestically, or is there a demand because having foreign professionals allows the clubs to increase their prices?
Oh, both. I would say the base, most importantly is that the experience. I think we have to admit that the foreign or European, US, American coaches or instructors, they have much more experience than the coaches in China, because it's a new profession in China. Horse equestrian coach or horse trainers, it's a new profession, but it's a very popular profession. For example, in Wuhan, there's a business school, but it's not like business school Yale, business school Harvard. It's a like a business school. No one care about it, and very small, very not so high level for those people who didn't get their bachelor's well, and they go to those kind of schools, professional schools, you know,
like a trade school.
Yes, training school, but they call themselves business school, and they set up a program major. They set up a major in equestrian industry, including coaching, training, breeding, etc. And their graduates actually got their job offers 1 year before the graduation. So
wow,
it's very catching.
Right. So there's a huge demand.
Interesting.
Do you know whether the clubs that have foreign staff, foreign trainers, foreign coaches, etc., are they more expensive? Like, are the clubs using the presence of foreign professionals to increase their prices?
I would say definitely in the way that if it's a foreign coach, for example, to give lessons to a student, the coach fee will be higher. But coaching or tutoring activities is very time consuming. It's labor work. So to maximize, I think it's the smart equestrian club owners will want to maximize and optimize their invest in foreign experts, for example, coaches, and to make them fun, to ask them to teach their Chinese coaches instead of students, because it makes more sense, and economically it's more optimist and make more sense.
Do you have any idea how much they're paying the foreign professionals to train the Chinese coaches?
It really depends because you have to, it's according to the profile, but I will say basically, as far as I know, they, for example, French coach, and they get quite handsome salary than they work in France, for example.
Are we talking like $150,000 US, or are we talking more or less?
It really depends on the city, you know, but I will say they will be paid basically as sometimes senior or like 3 years experience university graduate in working in a luxury brands as a event manager. Sometimes like at this level of salary, they can live very comfortable in China, in most city. But I have to say that I've seen quite a lot of foreign coaches or experts. They don't get very comfortable or mentally very well settling in China as well. There's always a culture shock, and maybe in the wrong equestrian club with the wrong owners, on the bad timing. So you have to think of that as also there's the more, it's more risky.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
In what way? What is the main source of the culture shock?
I think the way can be a wealth. I don't want to admit it, but I think it's the welfare of horses can be a culture shock. And also the way, the fact that Chinese riders, most, I would say part of them, or the beginners at least, they don't really learn from the small things, like how to settle up, how to tack your horse, right? It's always the first lessons in France, at least. So you have to learn how to take care of your horses, your horse, before riding on the horseback. But in China, sometimes they are so eager to get the kids or riders interested in this sport, they just put the riders on the horse right away. And when they come to the stable or come to the equestrian club, the horse already settled and already ready to ride.
Right. So they're missing that horsemanship that is taught in Europe and in America for the most part. Gotcha.
Yeah, but I think, as I already said, it's coming up. I see a lot of very cute, the young people, young girls, they're really keen of their horses. Even if the club horses, they take care of the horses. They want to spend time with the horses. They can do everything around the horses, spend time around the horses instead of like video games, etc. So I think...
Do these foreign coaches need to be able to speak Mandarin or Chinese or what? Or Cantonese?
Not necessary. English speaking is good. French speaking, they can equip, they can hire, have translators. So that's why.
All right.
That's also the reason why a smart owner, horse equestrian owners, will put the foreign coach to teach their staff, local staff, instead of the riders directory.
Right.
There's always language barriers, and also the translation work can be double by triple.
Yeah. What are some of the, because you mentioned that there are these new trade schools that are branded as business schools that have equestrian curriculum. So what are, do you know the names of some of those schools in China?
That's the one I mentioned is Wuhan Business School. Hmm. And there are many now. There are one in Shandong, where the province of cowboy, but agriculture in China, there's many agriculture university or schools as well, training school. So in some of them, they have the equation, curriculums now. And I think roughly 20 training school universities having this major, and in China nowadays.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you foresee those continuing to expand and increase in China?
Absolutely. Huge demand, because with the knowledge of people, riders, and the horse equestrian owners, coaches, they got more aware of the importance of welfare, horse welfare. They want their horse to perform. They want to take good care of their horses. They will need professionals. So from many aspects, from many details. So for example, vets, they're huge demand, and the clinics, still very expensive, but there are few horse clinics with Chinese vets. They're very demanding.
Mm. Right.
Okay.
Right. We've got two more questions, and then we'll let you go because we know it's late there. One question is very short, and I can't believe we haven't asked it already. And then I'll ask the second question. So the first question is, what is the most popular and growing discipline or disciplines of the equestrian sport? I can't believe we haven't asked that yet. And then the last final question is, what does the next 5 years of the equestrian sport and economy in China look like to you? And to And to give that some more context, are big companies, so in America and Europe, for example, that you know the sport is becoming a professional sport when large established brands are starting to sponsor events and they're starting to release clothing that is equestrian focused because they want to appeal to that market. So what does the next 5 years of the equestrian sport and economy look like in China to you?
Yeah. For the first question, equestrian jumping. Jumping competition is the without doubt the most important dominating discipline in the Chinese equine market for the moment being. But the dressage is catching up. The horseback travel is very popular.
The horseback what?
Horseback travel, like outdoor riding.
Endurance riding.
Like adventure, like trail riding.
Like hobby trail riding.
Yeah. Yeah, hospital, right. Trips, travels, especially that we cannot go out, you know, go abroad due to the pandemic. So many Chinese try to find travel activities, exotic travel activities in China. So horseback travel became a huge trend in the recent 2 years. Didn't really affect by the pandemic. Of course, hopefully, my hope for the next 5 years, of course, those disciplines continue to grow. But I'm also a very big fan of horse racing. So I hopefully the horse racing can bring it to the next level. Maybe some hope for the opening.
Legalization?
Yeah. Maybe some hope for the legalization of horse racing betting in China. In the next coming years, 10 years, they will be huge because the horse racing is another level of the game. So the turnover we are talking about, the driven force for the industry is another level, the totally another level. So, but even without the betting, I think the Chinese equestrian and equine market is there's still horse racing in China. So the Chinese equine market will continue to grow in the next 5 years. And as you said, then maybe they need more good, high quality or high level competitions and brandings, attracting more elements, brands from beyond the equestrian or the equine communities, so get more interest from spotlights from the other industry or the other experts, so can make a breakthrough of the development, not only for the community but for a bigger population or a more like a democratic or massive market for the industry.
And are there starting to be already, or are you aware of any plans for there to be some large international prestigious equestrian competitions?
Yes,
like FEI Grand Prix.
Yeah, we have many FEI two, three stars competition in China already in different cities. But the most prestigious competition, I would say, is the Global Champions 2 in Shanghai. It's happening in five, six years already, but has been stopped due to the COVID for 2 years and for this year as well. But Shanghai is, and the Yangtze River is definitely the place to watch for the next 5 years. If it comes geographically speaking, the Shanghai, for example, is building a question center in the city center of Shanghai, like in the Pudong side, in the New York side of Shanghai, in the city center. So it's quite big stadiums or arenas for competition and some complementary horse stables and boxes around. Relatively small compared to a real equestrian club or stables, but it's more like a competition center for horses. It's the first stadium or arena, competition arena in China, in a big city like Shanghai, and in a location so close to this, the heart of the city. So it's a big thing. So
right, and are luxury brands starting to sponsor these events, or have they already been sponsoring them?
of course, globally, Longjing is still the biggest or the most present luxury brands in equestrian or horse racing industry or events. So Longjing is sponsoring some events in China, big events, equestrian competitions in China. And also Hermès is also very actively promoting their brands and their equestrian equipment, products. So Hermès is one of our clients as well. So we are helping them to expand their business in equestrian products in China and try to participate more in the events and competitions. And there's many more, the lifestyle brands and some hotel brands and wine, champagne, they will get more. I think because, of course, as we all know, the equestrian sports and horse racing is globally considered as like an elite, a prestigious event. So those brands, once they got the real knowledge of the what is the sport and who are those people involved in this sport, they will come. So absolutely. I think it will go quite naturally.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. That's been a huge help and extremely interesting.
Yeah, it was so lovely to meet you. I'm so inspired now to go and check out the horse industry, the horse scene in China. So hopefully that day will come soon when the pandemic is over and we can have to China.
We'll come across and attend this event in Shanghai. It
sounds amazing.
Yes. But before the pandemic, you can, if you are interested in knowing more about the Chinese equine market, you can always go to listen our podcast. We have a podcast named China Horse Business, and you can find it on every channels, podcast channels, Spotify, Apple Podcast, even on our website to listen it up. And it's a weekly podcast, bring the updates and the latest market news to our listeners. And the big news is that on September 6th, we will hosting with my co-host Jojo Wang. We will host the first edition of Horse Business Live, China Horse Business Live is a monthly webinar then in which the business stakeholders from international business stakeholders can in fact directly talk to Chinese audience and present their products, their services and brands, etc. So it's quite exciting. We are getting ready for that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. And we'd love to promote that on Pegasus too. So offline, I'll get that information from you so our listeners and our members on Pegasus can go and watch that webinar and learn more about you and Wonder Horse and hear that. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, we might have to make this an annual thing going forward so we can keep the rest of the world informed as to what's happening in China as the sport progresses.
Yes, and we would love to have you guys on our podcast as well to talk about and webinars to talk about what's going on in the U.S. I think
absolutely. We are
as curious as you about the other side of the world, what's happening.
I know it's like we're different spaceships coming down. Like, what is your planet like?
Yeah. With the digital solutions nowadays, I think it's very easy. We just have to really get started.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time. We'll let you go so you can go to bed. We know it's late there, but we appreciate you staying up late and we'll be in contact soon, no doubt.
Thank you, Zoe.
Thank you, Zoe. Lovely to meet you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.